Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel, and I'm joined at the Baseball America podcast nook for the first time by Connor Glassy, who was introduced to all of us here at Baseball America as, no, I didn't say Connor Gillespie. I said Connor Glassy, which just tells you just how dorky we are, Connor. But I mean, that's a full compliment. You fit right in. So well, welcome to Baseball America's podcast.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
He's also introduced us to Sarah's empanadas, which we're very excited about. So it's starting to get into the rotation. It's kind of like a midweek starter right now, but I have a feeling it could become a regular weekend guy as we get closer to it.
I think so. I know my food, and Sarah's empanadas, it's a plus lunch establishment.
I think so. I think if we keep on pimping it a little bit more, it might become the – you might have to send your emails to the Sarah's Empanadas inbox at podcast at baseballamerica.com, or you could follow our Twitter page, sponsored by nobody right now, but opportunity does await, at twitter.com/baseballamerica. That was Connor's idea, and so you can follow us on Twitter. And, I mean, I do think we've got more than 1,000 followers, you just said, coming up to us before we came on air here. And I think, you know, this is the time. If you really are a Baseball America fan and you're into the technology like that, I think this is the time, because we've had pretty constant updates on the draft blog the last – well, this entire month. And now it's just getting ready to get stupid, like, looped with our with our updates. Because, actually, the thing is, like, can we update the blog enough – while we're updating the paid content on the site enough? That's the challenge this time of year, because there's so much. If you're a subscriber, or if you're ever thinking about subscribing, if you subscribe right now, you'd think, oh my God, I'm getting more than my money's worth, because we're going to have so much content, it's sick.
That's true. And that's true. We are, we've all been stretched thin, you know, working, burning the midnight oil, and just, you know, working hard to bring everybody the best draft coverage out there.
And it's fun to do. That's the problem with it. That's why you end up working so hard. And that's why Aaron, you know, Fit, for example, just read a weekend preview. He's been college blogging all week. And now he's going to see Georgia Tech and Duke with a nice Duke with a couple of interesting sleeper prospects. You know, that's why we're both going to probably go sometime this weekend, Clemson at North Carolina State. Clemson has some pretty interesting prospects, including Chris Dwyer, draft eligible freshman. So that's in our that's all coming up in our draft preview issue this year. With the draft being pushed back a little bit and the way our publication schedule work, we actually have a two-part draft preview issue for people to look forward to. The first issue, which we just finished today, going to press as we speak, that issue has the same amount of scouting reports as we've always had in a draft preview issue. In fact, they might even have a few more, and they're just organized. Instead of 1 to 200, they're organized by position. That was a lot of fun, actually. That was Bird of the Midnight Oil, Connor. We've had a couple of 9 o'clock at night meetings, which are always interesting this time of year. I'd say that's been the least fun part of the process. The most fun part of the process has been going to the games and talking to the scouts and meeting some of these guys. You've gone to games around here, and you've also been out on the West a couple trips for us this year. Let's talk about some of the players that you and I have both seen this spring. And the one thing I think that's the biggest thing I wish we had done, we got to see him last summer with Team USA, but neither of us have seen Steven Strasburg this spring. So that's been, I've seen him on TV once. I stand corrected. But, you know, we haven't seen him in person. And suffice it to say, that seems like that's been a great treat for everybody who's gotten a chance to see that guy. I know I'm jealous of normally of people who live in San Diago, but now I'm even more jealous because this year he's been insane.
Yeah, earlier in the year, you know, I was checking flights to see how cheap I could get out there, because this is a guy that kind of talent does not come around very often.
No, it doesn't.
You know, and like you said, I am jealous of people who've gotten to see him. But we've gotten to see some good players ourselves. You know, we're here in North Carolina to see Dustin Ackley, Alex White.
Those are two first 10 potential picks. I think they're both first 10 talents. You also got to see Grant Green on a trip up to UW.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about those two players, because to me, they entered the year as the top two position players available, especially on the college side. I think Donovan Tate could definitely contend with them on the high school side. But Ackley's had, especially right now, he's red hot. He's back over 400. There are at least three general managers or scouting directors in to see him today as Boston, they're in Boston, North Carolina is at Boston College this weekend. And then you have Grant Green with USC, where, you know, there's several sky directors who live in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. He's had the scrutiny all year. They've had really divergent seasons, it seems like, but then we check the stats while we're editing this issue, and Grant Green's back up to 365. Kind of what's your feel for those two players? What were your impressions seeing them this spring?
Well, actually, you know, I've seen him more, and he's been fun to watch. He has just such a patient approach at the plate.
Right.
He goes up there. You know he's looking for his pitch. I mean, to me, he can almost be a little too patient sometimes.
Yeah, I
sometimes
agree.
It looks like he's up there looking to take a walk. And, you know, as one of the best hitters in the country, yeah. maybe the best hitter in the country, sometimes I would like to see him be a little bit more aggressive.
Because it's 40-plus walks this year, so I think yeah, it's 41, I mean, 42 walks.
And that's great, but his thing is hitting. He has such good hitability.
Yeah. He barrels up balls very consistently, and, you know, the amazing thing to me is that his power has always kind of been questioned. He's had 16 home runs this year. He's second in the ACC. He hit 17 yeah. his first 2 years. He has 16 this year. I do think that he, as good as he is, I think he's streaky. You know, I've seen him getting streaks, and he was in one last year in Omaha where everything was up the middle. He just wasn't pulling anything, mm-hmm. but he also was never late. Everything was at the middle. If you looked at his hit chart, I bet you it would have just been singles straight up the middle, line drive after line drive after line drive.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like he was in a mode where he was wanting to turn on the ball. But this year, he has gotten in that mode, and I think that's where maybe some of the patience come from. I think he's feeling his way mm-hmm. of being a hitter who is so good and so gifted with his hand-eye coordination. I think he's trying to figure out, okay, I'm supposed to work myself into a count to get a pitch I can drive. I don't think he knows yet how to do it. I think he's learning it. I think he will learn it. But to me, his offensive upside's pretty unlimited. I think he's a future batting champion.
I definitely could see that. I don't know how much, you know, you talked about his power this year. I don't know how much he's actually going to hit for, you know, yeah. with Wood against Major League Pitching. But
it's a tough question.
But he is a guy that can hit a line drive anywhere he wants. He has the speed, you know, he can get on base.
He plays hard. That's underrated, but maybe that's more of a fan experience part as opposed to an objective analyst or whatever. But as someone who just likes baseball, mm-hmm. One moment really stood out for me on Sunday, the last game I saw him play, and he had a pop-up, and he was clearly frustrated, and he, you know, took the bat in his right hand and chucked it into the ground, probably left a couple divots. But then he sprinted as the ball was in the air. He was basically to second base by the time the ball came down. You just don't see that many people do that. Especially the best player on the team. And the guy who's frankly been their best player for 3 years. And they've had some other high picks. He's been the best player on the team since the day he walked on the field for North Carolina. He's led them to Omaha twice before. It wouldn't shock me if he led them back to Omaha, even though this team has some real deficiencies. But that's a whole other story. And, but Grant Green, speaking of a team with deficiencies.
Well, let's hold on.
Wrap up Ackley.
Let's hold on with Ackley for just a second. Let's go back. I mean, if you're going to pick a guy that high, you're banking on the fact that he's going to be a center fielder for you.
I think so.
You saw him out in center field. How did he look?
Good question. I was actually impressed the game that I saw him with his ball tracking. I did watch him actually in the infield mm-hmm. shagging balls. And then I watched him during the game. And that's pretty much all I was really bearing down on in the entire game was Dustin Ackley. And, you know, there was a line drive to the gap, a left center field line drive. And that's the ball that really – there was a play that had to be made, and he made the play. Everything else was fairly routine. You could see him backing up plays. There was a play where there was a throw to second, and neither the second baseman nor the shortstop covered. And Mark Fleury, he's also going to be a high draft pick. His throw was right on the bag, mm-hmm. but there was no one there to catch it. So, but Ackley recognized that and came in quickly and backed up the play. So that was interesting. But the play to the gap was a line drive to the left center field gap. He took the right route. He got there quickly. He got the ball back into the infield quickly, but his arm is not there. He's wearing a wrap on his elbow mm-hmm. when he plays the outfield. I did not notice him wearing that when he played first base other times this year.
No.
He had Tommy John surgery in probably September, I think it was. And his arm's not all the way back.
Right.
And he admitted to some soreness after the game. So that's the only question for me. And, to me, so much of where they profile depends on how your team looks. Mm-hmm. You know, Ryan Garko does not fit the profile at first base. But the 2007 Indians went really deep and almost went to the World Series with Ryan Garko at first base having a good year. Why? Because they had Victor Martinez behind the plate and Grady Sizemore in center and Johnny Peralta at short. That guy's hitting for non-profile power at those positions. So on the right team, whether Dustin Ackley hits for power or not may not matter. you know, if he played with a second baseman like Ryan Sandberg did, he'd fit right in at first base with a 40-homer second baseman. But I think he does. He has infinite more value at center field, and I think he's just athletic enough and too much of a ball player to not make that work. So if Bernie Williams can play center field, you know, maybe that's a more realistic comparison. He's not a switch hitter. Bernie Williams at times an asset defensively, more and often than not, I think he was not.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a guy who was a great hitter who also happened to have power. I think that's going to be Dustin Ackley, a great hitter with average power. I mean, I think he's going to be a special offensive player, and I think he's going to steal bases, too, at the pro level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that speed's going to play, has instincts. He was 19 for 22, I think it was, last year.
Mm-hmm.
He just hasn't run as much this year because he's more in the three hole than the one hole. But
right.
If he's a center fielder, I could see him in the one or two hole and being a top of the order, you know, kind of guy.
Sure, so, sure.
And now you saw Green. I haven't seen Grant Green ever. I didn't see him in the Cape last year. I didn't see him. Haven't seen him this year. What's your take on Grant Green? You saw him almost like when he was bottoming out, because he's really seems like he's gotten hot since then.
Yeah, I did. You know, saw him up there, and you know, just saw him taking infield before. He's more athletic than I had envisioned in my head for some reason. But he's a trim guy. Smooth actions at shortstop, and you know, a good enough arm, I would say. Not an arm that really wows you, but
right, like Tulowitzki's arm stands out.
Yeah, it does.
Because he's been compared so much to Tulowitzki and Longoria. I think that's just not fair to him.
It's not fair. I mean, you know, rarely is it fair to compare players to superstars. I mean, it's
right.
Just, you know,
that's a great point. There's only Evan Longoria is who he is because there aren't that many players like him.
Right.
So why would you just assume there's another Evan Longoria around
right.
who's fused with Troy Tulowitzki,
right.
who's also a unique player. Yeah, it doesn't make
right.
sense.
Right, so, you know, maybe that contributed a little bit to his, you know, the fact that he hasn't really gone out there and blown the doors off, you know.
Right.
I mean, he's had a good season. It's pretty comparable to what he did last year. It's not that big step forward everyone was hoping for, I think.
That's a good way to put it, actually. Especially on the power side.
Yeah, right, right.
I think that's the big issue. It seems like that I've run into is people are just there's some questions on the bat. I know the defensive numbers are messy. I think the defensive tools are there. I don't think that's a question.
Yeah.
You know, for me. So.
Yeah. When I saw him though, I mean, you know, I saw him take batting practice and he was just hitting line drives. He wasn't even showing any power in batting practice.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, in the game, it looked like a guy that was just kind of going through the motions. You didn't see that outright enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, that you really want to see from a guy who's expected to go that high and expected to make a lot of money.
Just what we talked about with Dustin Ackley. I mean, it's not that he's lackadaisical or anything, but you want to see the guy. In my mind, I like to see the guy who's the best player on the field prove to everybody else he's the best player on the field and
act
play.
Like it.
And act like it, play like it. Play with some fire, dominate.
Yeah.
I want to see the best player on the field be the best player on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that consistently really for 3 years out of Ackley. That's why I'm a big Ackley believer. Southern California, it's a different deal. That team the last couple of years has underachieved. They have a very fascinating another prospect who's fascinating in his own right in Robert Stock out there for USC. But and you also saw with you saw Washington. I forget who else you saw out there. Did you see Gonzaga as well? I don't remember
yeah.
who else was out there.
Well, that was the time before.
The previous trip. Gonzaga. Oh, in Arizona State.
Yep.
You got to
yep.
see Mike Leake.
Yep.
Is Mike Leake the favorite player that you've seen this year, or would that be Dustin Ackley? Mike Leake is a guy who imposes his will on a game.
Sure.
But he has a little more opportunity to do that with
yeah,
the ball.
Yeah, I got to see Mike
hand.
Leake at Safeco Field, actually, which was a lot of fun.
That is pretty cool.
And as far as favorite players I've seen, yeah, he's up there. He's just so fun to watch because he's, you know, I got to root for the short guys, right? You know,
right.
So he's a smaller pitcher, but just goes out there and just brings it. I mean, he has a no-nonsense attitude on the mound. You can just tell by looking at him, he wants to get everybody out.
Yeah.
And he pounds a strike zone with, you know, four or five different pitches that
he
can throw for strikes.
Is he a pretty good tempo as well? Is that his
yeah.
is tempo guy?
Yeah.
I mean, love guys like that. That's why I like Justin Verlander. When he's going well, he's right back on the rubber and he's just attacking hitters, you know.
Yeah, he's aggressive out there.
I get a little tired. No offense to Ken Revisa, but I get a little tired of the Ken Revisa, you know, the pitchers who do their breathing in between every pitch and take forever and
walk around the mound a little bit.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Not for me. It's the Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's Connor. We have a few questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Let's take a couple of these. I know one of these is actually specifically a draft question from Joe Lacates. Looking forward to what should be his usual outstanding draft covered by everyone at BA. Thank you, Joe. Also wondering if we could discuss two fast-rising prep players, some of the reports you were hearing about them, Mike Trout and Daniel Fields. He loves the toolsy guys, and that's Joe. And, you know, Joe has asked a lot of questions, and they're usually good ones. That's why we usually answer them. Mike Trout sounds pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds like a guy who is all tooled up, and he's got somewhere to go.
Yep. But
first off, he runs. So usually if you're a high school player who runs and you have some present hitting ability, those guys fly off the board usually.
Yeah, they do.
It seems like we have him in the first round, or in that first round mix. I've heard more heat on him than on Daniel Fields. I'm not hearing the Daniel Fields love. This is the kid of Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, certainly, Connor, we heard this in the Final Four. Detroit could use some good news.
That's true.
I'm not sure if a kid out of Detroit getting picked in high school is going to necessarily make, you know, the good news for the people of Detroit. But I think Trout's got more draft helium than Fields. And I think Trout's got a better chance to go high. I think we had Fields in that third or fourth round mix as opposed to Trout. Do you remember any of those from our write-ups?
I remember a lot about Fields, but Mike Trout, you know, there's a great article that I just proofed for the first draft preview.
That's right,
coming
Nathan
out.
Rohde issue.
Yeah, Nathan Rohde went up there and saw him. And what stood out to me about Trout, I mean, I guess what scouts have loved, I mean, they've had some real rough weather up there.
Right.
But he and his family have been very accommodating, and his high school coach at you know, helping the scouts see him play. Because, you know, it's tough for scouts when they're trying to plan out their schedules.
Absolutely.
To get up there and hope that it doesn't rain. And he has, you know, run into some bad weather up there. And so I guess he's been putting on, you know, individual workouts and scrimmages that the scouts and cross-checkers have been able to see.
And I think I heard one part of the story was that basically the scouts in that area are almost arguing over whose meal was better that the mom made when they've been on their home visits. It's been that level. And I think you bring up a good point that we've also talked a little bit about. And you're doing the West this year.
Mm-hmm.
I've read into this doing the West in the past. If you can't get a player, if you're an area scout and you really want to run a player up your list, if you can't get him cross-checked, well, then you just can't run him up your list, and you've run into this a little bit.
Yeah.
And the usual areas, the four corners. It's almost like if a guy's not at a big-time college out there, or it's just hard to see guys
out
there. And that's also how you get pop-up guys who race up lists. That's what happened last year with Stephen Fife in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
The one time he got cross-checked, everybody saw him throw really well. It was Utah, New Mexico. New Mexico had their pitcher, Bobby LaFrambois, I think is his name.
Mariners guy.
That's right. And Fife was in there with Utah. And so it got cross-checked. Like, every West cross-checker was there. That was their one time they were going to see Fife, and they were going to knock off LaFrambois at the same time. And Fife was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So Fife went from fifth to seventh round to way up the list. That ended up being a second rounder. So you've run into that with a couple players, it sounds like.
I have. One player that, you know, guys keep talking like that about is Max Walla at the Albuquerque Academy in New Mexico. I mean, guys love his hit ability. He has some really good raw power, especially for his size. He's only about 5'11", and guys take a look at him, and sometimes they think that he kind of has a bad body because he's shorter, but this guy is a two-time state swimming champ, and
he's
actually chiseled. I mean, the kid has all kinds of muscles I didn't even know existed, you know? So he can actually, I mean, he can hit, but he's just kind of out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's tough for guys to get second looks on him. So he's, you know, a guy that looks like he's going to go a little lower than where he might be if he were in, you know, San Diego or Phoenix or something like that.
So I really think this happens a lot with these players. I think a lot of the college bats, you know, last year's Cape class wasn't necessarily great. Even some of the college arms who were good in the Cape, like a Ben Tootle, who's missed a month with a virus. I think some of those guys who people saw really well last summer are going to go really high this year, whether they've had great springs or not,
mm-hmm.
because national guys have more history. National scouts have more history with those players. than they have with others. So that's why the draft is such an inexact science, and you can talk about the numbers and all these kind of things if you want to, but to me, that's a factor. Who sees you, how they see you, when they see you. For example, in my area, I'm doing the Southeast this year, Florida is so chock full of talent, and there's not a ton of separation between LaVon Washington and, say, Bobby Bortring at the top, and a guy like Michael Ullman, who's like a fifth-round pick, mm-hmm. but has first-round power, or a guy like Mike Zanino, or some of the other high school catchers, J.R. Murphy, who's really moved up, Austin Maddox, who's moved down. There's so many catchers in that state. I think it really depends on when you get seen. Dane Williams, hard-throwing right-hand out of Miami area high school, who tore up his knee in the fall and has had a really good spring at times, showing like 95, 96 mile-an-hour velocity. So really hard to get a read on, and I think that's why it's so unpredictable and so hard to really know who's going at the top. I really think it's going to be different boards for different folks.
That's true. And even, you know, one other thing I've heard, you know, this is my first year trying to put this whole puzzle together, but one thing I've heard is, you know, especially the cross-checkers, they want to see these guys against good competition.
Right.
You know,
great point.
It's one thing to hit, you know, an 75-mile-an-hour fastball.
Right.
It's a different thing to hit, you know, a guy who can actually pitch and has some velocity. And that's – it's more of an issue at the high school level, so that's why, you know, scouts love these – love when teams get into the playoffs late in the year and these all-star games and things like that. But I'm seeing that even at the college level. I mean, you know, the Pac-10 for pitchers is a little down this year. There's not as many good arms.
No doubt.
And so, you know, that could hurt some of the hitters in there, like a guy at UW, Kyle Conley. I've been, you know, trying to find out about him. And
well,
one thing I keep hearing.
He had 19 home runs last year, didn't he? I mean, he had a big year last year.
If he hasn't done it already, I haven't checked the stats recently, but if he hasn't done it already, he's about to become UW's all-time home run leader.
Okay.
But the one thing I hear on him is that, man, I wish we could really see him against some quality pitching, because Pac-10's down a little bit this year, and there aren't a lot of guys that you can, you know, really point to that he's faced and go, okay, well, that's what he's going to face in the minor leagues.
It's so amazing to hear that, because it's true. It's for sure it's true. But, I mean, like, just say 2006, just four drafts ago, you had Ian Kennedy on Friday, Tim Lincecum on Friday, Brandon Morrow on Friday, Greg Reynolds on Friday, Oregon State had three pitchers who led them to the College World Series championship, you know, going that year. Arizona, I believe, Preston Gilman, but if they didn't have Preston Gilman, they might have had Melanson out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
I think John Malone might have still been around. It was crazy, crazy talent in the Pac-10.
Yep.
Pitching wise, it was four first round picks that year out of the Pac-10 just on Friday nights.
Yep.
And you know, a lot of those guys are already big leaguers or have been in the big leagues or have made an impact in the big leagues. So it's amazing how these things go in cycles. The West, I think, in general is down this year.
It is.
And it's tougher to find some pop-up guys. Who's maybe your favorite guy after you got off the phone with a scout? It didn't even have to be a high pick, but after you got off the phone with a scout or a college recruiter or something like that, where you got off the phone and you said, I've got to find out more about this guy. Has there been a guy like that that's really captivated you a little bit?
One guy, it's been kind of funny because, you know, you hear about a guy and, you know, maybe a scout mentions a player and then or a coach mentions, you know, oh, this guy is kind of making some noise. And one of the funniest things that I think has happened this year is that sometimes you'll ask a scout about a certain guy and they'll be silent and they'll be like, how'd you hear about that guy?
That's right.
It's like their secret guy, you know. And one guy I've heard a little bit about like that. I'm still trying to dig up some stuff on. But a catcher in Arizona named Sergio Burrell.
Nice.
17 years old.
Okay, so he's a high school kid.
He's a high school kid. Okay. Yeah, he's a high school kid, and he's 17 years old and has some power. Really soft hands. He's Mexican, I believe, so he's bilingual. He has a lot of things going for him, and he's one of those guys where I asked about him, and it was like, man, how'd you hear about that guy? You know.
That's outstanding. I love those kind of players. Absolutely. I don't think I have anybody like that in the Southeast that I've dug up anyway, which is unfortunate. It probably means I'm not digging hard enough. There is a fascinating guy at East Carolina named Devin Harris, who I thought about putting into our top 200. He's an eligible sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
The Southeast is just lousy with eligible sophomores. I mean, Kentrell Davis, all through the Southeastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many draft eligible sophomores, and Harris is one of them. Obviously, East Carolina's in Conference USA. But he's really toolsy. He's like 6'2", 220. He's got a right field arm, but he has a lot of swing and miss there. And, You know, but in a year without a ton of college bats, I have a feeling Devin Harris is going to get overdrafted. Overdrafted, it sounds harsh. I think he's going to get drafted higher than maybe he would be normally.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have maybe third or fourth round talent.
Right.
He has third or fourth round tools. He just hasn't shown that present hitting ability. He's been one of the most fascinating guys. And then I am fascinated by the Billy Hamilton kid in Mississippi,
yep,
who's 150 pounds. I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. What do you do? What do you do with that? But there's some deep cut guys in Georgia as well. The D3 kid I wrote about the other day, Sariski out of Oglethorpe. That's interesting. I'm starting to doubt the 97 that his coach told me, but I still think this is it's a low 90s arm at a Division III school. He's an eligible sophomore, so.
Yeah, one interesting thing, I mean, you're talking about draft-eligible sophomores. You mentioned Chris Dwyer when we were first talking about this. Explain to our listeners how somebody becomes a draft-eligible freshman. That's really unique.
It's amazing that he's 21 and he's a freshman, and Robert Stock is 19 and is a junior. I mean, Robert Stock skipped his high school senior season, so that's how that makes sense. He would have been young anyway for his age group, but he came in a year early, so that's why he is as young as he is. But then Chris Dwyer basically was held back a year in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when he was a high school junior, or maybe he might have been a sophomore, he went to this prep school in Salisbury, Connecticut, Salisbury School. And instead of going in there as a junior or whatever he should have gone in as, he went in as a sophomore.
Mm.
So he lost a year in that translation as well. That's why he's already 21.
Wow.
He just turned 21 in April of his freshman year in college. That's goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really
goofy. That's crazy.
I would have loved that as a college freshman in some ways. But other ways, I would imagine that when I was a senior and I was like 24, I would have been like, you know, trying to crawl out of my skin trying to get out of college.
Yep.
So I don't think Chris Dwyer will be a 24-year-old senior. I'll put it that way.
Yep.
I have a feeling that Chris Dwyer will be drafted this year. I think he'll sign. He's a left-hander who's shown above-average stuff at times, but he's been very inconsistent. So he's pitched like a freshman in that regard, and that's the unusual thing, is that in the more advanced, the older guy would not pitch like a freshman. And yet the younger guy, Robert Stock, is the one who's shown the aptitude.
Mm-hmm.
After failing, basically, as a catcher, there's no other way to put it, he was hitting a soft 220 this year.
Right.
He's gone to the mound, and he's 90-92, touching a 5 with a plus changeup and a serviceable breaking ball. So pretty fascinating, and we have features on both those guys on Facing Pages along with Texas Fireballer Shelby Miller and then Mike Trout. So I think we have a good draft preview for you, and then I think we're going to have another one right after that. So it's going to be two great tastes that hopefully go great together. So we've already run out of time, though, on the Baseball America podcast. We'll be back on Monday, Aaron and I, with our regular college podcast. Send those questions into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Connor, any last thoughts on the draft before we sign off?
I got to get back to work.
Exactly.
Go keep writing guys up here.
We still have state write-ups to do, so that's all going to be at baseballamerica.com in the coming weeks. So for Connor Glassy, I'm John Manuel. Until next time, so long, everybody.